Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 14th of August. Susan Crawford is a law professor, former White House telecommunications official under President Obama. A recent article on Huffington Post said this about her. These days, there ought to be dozens of airplanes pulling banners with her name on them, flying over New York City, Los Angeles, Dallas, and other cities. Signs that read, "Damn it, Susan, you were right." Why? She was way out in front of warning the rest of us about the dangers that come from permitting big cable and telephone companies to exercise monopoly or near-monopoly power over television, cable, and internet services. As you know, in many big cities in the country, the viewers are unable to watch CBS and CBS-owned channels, Showtime and TMC. In Milwaukee, TV viewers unable to watch NBC programming. Both of these blackouts have been going on for weeks. Certainly, they are not the first, but they may be the longest. Susan has a very interesting background, and we hope you heard about this interview. I'm sorry we couldn't fly banners. Wouldn't that be fun? You ought to listen to this interview with Susan. But I'm glad you're listening now. She recently authored Captive Audience, The Telecom Industry and Monopoly Power in the New Gilded Age. She also regularly contributes to Bloomberg View and Wired. She served as Special Assistant to the President for Science, Technology, and Innovation Policy and co-led the FCC transition team between the Bush and Obama administrations. She's a fellow at the Roosevelt Institute, leading their work on making high-speed internet access a universal, affordable resource for all, and she's a member of Mayor Bloomberg's Advisory Council on Technology and Innovation. We'll be welcoming phone calls. Are you upset about these blackouts? Does it make a difference? Have you changed your habits? Why are they happening more frequently? Who's to blame here? Do you feel like you, the consumer, is getting the bad end of both the cable company and also the broadcast stations? Everybody wants, it seems to me, a little bit more money, if not a lot more money. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email, talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Susan Crawford, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Kathleen. Thanks for having me on.
Well, why is there a blackout of CBS? And in Milwaukee, it's a different story, but it's NBC in Milwaukee and I believe in Green Bay as well. What's going on? Why is it happening?
Well, these are contractual disputes that pop up every once in a while. Back in 1992, so almost more than 20 years ago, Congress made a deal that was aimed at launching a new satellite industry to compete with the cable guys. And part of that deal to get the broadcasters on board gave broadcasters the right to ask every few years cable and satellite distributors for money in exchange for their signals. So we've got these five big broadcasters, CBS, NBC, Fox, and the others, and every once in a while they come to loggerheads where the broadcasters don't get as much money as they think they should get from the cable distributors. And these amounts are getting bigger and bigger. So where in 2006, the broadcasters in total got about $200 million in these fees, in 2018, they're expecting $6 billion.
Whoa!
Right. So you could say, look, here are these big guys. The cable distributors make an enormous amount of money. And maybe they should be paying broadcasters something for their signal. The problem is that all of these fees get passed on to consumers, and in these few markets, Time Warner Cable in Dallas and in Los Angeles and in New York has decided to draw the line and say, we're not going to pay more for the privilege of carrying broadcast when it's available over the air. The bigger picture here, though, is that consumers may want to cut the cord and say, well, forget these very expensive cable TV packages. We're just going to go with what we can get online. And there, I've written a lot about the problem that this rosy scenario of increasing online choice is not guaranteed because high-speed internet access may not scale to meet increasing consumer demand because these companies have so much market power. So that's where I think this whole thing is heading.
Right. The We had a listener who wrote in, actually it's a Facebook comment that I think is really interesting. Whatever happened to the congressional legislation that required cable providers to carry all local programming over the air channels? So CBS, NBC, and ABC and Fox would have to be something that you would just carry. It was required. The government required cable to carry that.
Right. Well, that's exactly what we still have in place. But the broadcaster has a choice. They could either elect to be carried for free or charge. So that's called retransmission consent. So there's an option for the broadcaster. It's in the broadcaster's hands to make that choice. So here, CBS has chosen to say, well, rather than being carried for free, we want to be paid.
Right. And yet they're already getting advertising money, so this is just extra money for them?
Well, it's extra money for everybody.
Right.
Everybody except the consumer. So, yes, the broadcasters, in fact, part of the problem with the cable systems is that the broadcasters hold on to so many of the ad slots and don't hand them over to the cable network. So, basically, the broadcasters want to be treated just like cable networks. So, you know, you'd create programming and then you'd make it available for distributors for a fixed rate. And broadcasters don't want to depend just on advertising revenue. They also want to get subscription revenue.
Right. I heard somewhere an NPR report last week that said that ESPN, they quoted a figure that was just astronomically high of how much it costs cable companies, what they have to pay for the ESPN programming. It was incredible.
Right. Well, let's put all this in perspective. So, yes, programming costs are going up, and sports is the addictive stuff that you really can't get without subscribing to a pay TV package. But in the last just couple of years, Time Warner Cable and Comcast together made $172 billion in revenue. And they invest very little of that in their networks, actually in expanding them to bring high-speed Internet access to more people. Only about $23 billion of that went into actually investing in capital. So these are very, very lucrative businesses. And they've been a guaranteed distribution channel for the broadcasters and for cable channels. And it basically, the entire system is perfectly engineered to raise prices and is very central to people's lives.
$172 billion. Where's all that money going?
Well, into the pockets of Comcast and Time Warner Cable, and to their shareholders. These giants are really doing extremely well. Their profit margins for data service are north of 95%. It only costs, let's say, a penny a gigabyte to deliver data to your home, but they can charge whatever they want for that because they're subject to no competition and no oversight.
How did that happen? I remember when that debate was taking place in Milwaukee a long time ago of who was going to get the rights to wire the whole city. It means that once you get those rights, there isn't going to be competition, right? Because nobody else will come in and wire. Somebody has to do all the groundwork.
Well, actually, in 1992, the federal government outlawed exclusive cable franchises as a matter of law. But you're absolutely right that as a matter of fact, these companies, these big guys, never enter each other's territories. They never compete with each other. So once you've got a cable actor locked in a city, it's just about impossible for someone else to show up. And what's going on right now is that what people really want and need in order to survive in the 21st century is data access, is high-speed Internet access. And so anybody showing up to compete would have to enter two markets at once. They'd have to build a wire to your home and get access to programming, this sports programming and all the other pay TV packages. And that's just really difficult to do. And that's why we see so little competition in American cities. And it's terrible because this high-speed Internet access connection is the modern-day substitute for the telephone.
Mm-hmm.
We all need it. You can't survive without it. It's
right.
Essentially a utility. But it's subject to no oversight. And Wisconsin, you know, deregulated this entire sector in 2011 as a state matter. So there's really very little recourse for consumers in Wisconsin.
And you talk about how big a problem this is for the economic well-being of the country, that because we're not getting broadband in a lot of areas, it's essential to the country's economic future.
That's right. And so just focusing on Wisconsin for a moment, less than 5% of people in Wisconsin are actually using wires in their homes that are capable of speeds that are 6 megabits per second or faster. Just to put that in perspective, in many cities in Asia, you can just get 100 megabit per second connection symmetrical, which means you can upload as quickly as you can download, and you can get that for, you know, $20, $30. In America and in Wisconsin, that kind of connection either isn't available, or if it is, would be so expensive that nobody could buy it. So we're really in a hole as a country. This is a giant social policy issue. This is just like electrification, which took a while in America and took real leadership to make it happen.
So what are they doing in Japan to make all of that available?
It's policy. Basically, this stuff doesn't happen by magic. This is like water or electricity or any other service that's expensive to build and that everybody needs in order to survive, in order to do well in the economy. So in Japan, they made sure that there was a wholesale fiber network across the country, and then that made possible lots and lots of retail-level competition, so you have choices of providers in your actual home. Japan just decided as a matter of national industrial policy that it was going to be important to make sure that people in that country had fiber in their homes for a reasonable price. Same thing is going on in China. It's a matter of policy there that all new homes should be built ready to receive fiber. In Korea, they're actually moving to gigabit speeds, 100 times faster than 100 megabits per second, so that they can, 10 times faster than 100 megabits per second. I get dazzled by the numbers. So that they can be the place where new kinds of high-capacity, low-latency uses of these networks are created and where those new jobs will be built. Mm-hmm. And we don't seem to have any plan in that regard.
So if we were to have a similar policy, would it require, I'm just wondering physically what it would require? Would you have to rewire things all over the country? And I just don't understand technically what you would have to do.
Well, in cities, the step would be to make sure that there was wholesale fiber running through sewage systems, back alleys, whatever street grid you've got, to make sure that this wholesale facility was in place. So, yes, it would require what people call overbuilding. And the reason we'd need to do that is that you could go after the existing incumbents and say, open up your lines, make sure that everybody gets service at a reasonable price. But we'd be mired in litigation for decades. So it would actually be faster to just make available a fiber network built by private providers, not built by the federal government, but make sure that it's available at a reasonable price across the country.
Mm-hmm. Going back to the cable blackout for a moment, when you say that the stations could elect to be carried for free on the cable, are they getting any kind of pushback now from people who have created the programs that aren't being seen, from people who want to see the Green Bay Packers on their normal kind of channel instead of the Spanish language channel? I'm just wondering if everybody's just saying, well, this is the way it is, or if some people are trying to change it.
Well, it's very difficult to change a situation where only one entity controls the rights, say, for football games. The broadcasters actually have a lot of power here because they can make sure that their programming is available over satellite or over telco fiber if it exists in people's homes. So they can just back away from the cable operators and make their programming available, let's say, by satellite. That's a big option for them. So far... Time Warner Cable is saying that it's not losing very many subscribers, but that may accelerate as people try to switch over to satellite. Here's the problem with satellite. It's a long way up to those devices, and so satellite companies can't sell the kind of data access that the cable operators can.
I see. Oh, my goodness. It just keeps getting bigger and bigger, the whole situation.
It's a big issue.
Yeah. And have we seen a lot more blackouts? I read somewhere that there's been kind of a minor explosion of blackouts over the past couple of years.
Well, there have been some big ones. There was one between Cablevision and Fox in 2010. But, it's just bound to happen because there are about five networks, right? And there are about seven major distributors cable and satellite and telco. So that's 7 times 5, and that's a lot of contractual negotiations, and sometimes they break down. Now, Comcast, in order to get the CBS on board with the Comcast merger with NBC, which happened in 2011, Comcast signs a 10-year agreement with CBS. So they're not breaking up over contractual negotiations right now, but you'll likely see more scuffles between Time Warner Cable and the networks and Cablevision and the networks. But this is really just a small part of the picture, because there are many other cable channels, non-broadcast cable channels, that continue to be available, but at ever, ever increasing prices.
Mm-hmm. Let's welcome phone calls. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Susan Crawford is our guest, professor at the Roosevelt Institute at the Benjamin Cardozo School of Law, co-director of the Berkman Center. She's the author of Captive Audience, The Telecom Industry and Monopoly Power in the New Gilded Age. She served as special assistant to President Obama for science, technology, and innovation policy, and co-led the FCC transition team between the Bush and Obama administrations. We thought we would look at the Time Warner blackout of CBS, and of course in Milwaukee and Green Bay, it's a blackout of NBC programs because of controversy with the Journal Communications Company. But this issue is much larger, as you can tell. She has written extensively about how we could be taking a big economic hit if we don't get high-speed internet service, broadband, which millions of Americans are not getting. And, of course, it's in the hands of these huge companies that are making, I didn't realize it was that much money, billions of dollars every year. What do you think? To you in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to phone calls for Susan Crawford, starting with Pete in central Wisconsin. Hello, Pete.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Fine, Pete. How are you?
We're having a lot of fun.
Good, I'm glad.
Let me give you a little background. I recently retired. I'm 66. When I was a very young lad, our company, which we still own, was a large real estate developer and builder in central Wisconsin. And I had the idea that the cable system was going to be the thing to get into. So every piece of property I touched, I took an easement on the back lot for my cable company that I hoped to build at some time in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my dear old dad wouldn't bankroll it, but some years later, the cable company came to me, and they figured out that they couldn't get across to several cities without having to deal with my easement, and made me a deal to use my easements. It went on very, very well for many years, and now it's a new company called Charter that's been bought by Bill Gates' buddy. And they have a convenient lapse of memory. They came in and really racked our rates up out of sight. They're charging the local population here, I see the bills, about $120 to $130 a month.
Ooh.
Which is crazy. We, along the line, decided to get into the internet business and operated a 5,000-subscriber ISP operation. And when we sold that off to one of the big boys, we kept all the high-speed equipment and such. And we give all of our residents in our apartment complexes, which we have over 350 units, free internet. We feel this is all part of the overall spectrum. And we were the first people to do this in the United States back in the early 80s.
Uh-huh.
And now we provide to our market rate tenants, to people to pay full boat, that $150 package that the charter companies charge it for free.
Oh.
And the charter company is not happy about that. And they're suing us, and we're going to grip.
Oh,
that's quite a story.
They're on my easements.
Oh, fascinating, Susan.
Yeah, I'm interested by this because Charter has a controlling interest in Charter has been bought by John Malone, who was the guy in the late 80s who was the cable cowboy in the United States. He was the largest cable operator in the country. He had to sell his systems to AT&T in 99, but he's now, again, the largest cable operator in the world, now through Liberty Global. And John Malone has said that his plan is to use data access as the monopoly service. He says cable is basically a monopoly now when it comes to data. It's an addictive product. And he intends to roll up as many cable companies as possible in the United States and make as much money as possible. So you are just the thin edge of a trend right there.
Fascinating. Thank you very much, Pete. Send us more information on what you're doing. We'd be interested in hearing it. Why is it that Congress has not, obviously there are a ton of problems here when you're talking about the economic well-being of America, when you're talking about people not being able to get access to local news programs, when you're talking about people who are paying huge bills to get cable and companies making billions and not reinvesting in that which is needed to make it, America strong again. Why isn't there a congressional investigation and some kind of, I don't know, reauthorization of a cable access price bill or something like that?
Well, politically, there's no upside for people in Congress right now to take on these giant concerns. They're extraordinarily politically active, very well connected, these companies. AT&T, which was responsible for the deregulation effort in Wisconsin, is the largest contributor to campaigns across the country. So there, it's number one. So there's no good reason to take this on unless you have political backing from your constituency. And the problem is that most Americans don't know about this issue or don't understand it. It looks as if things are fine. Of course, America's always number one. We've always been number one. But when it comes to the availability of reasonably priced communications for all Americans and all the jobs and all the things that that's going to bring, we just don't understand how bad it is and how much we're becoming a third world nation, particularly in comparison to Asia. So it would take a real education effort and genuine political commitment across the country to change this picture, to give legislators the strength of mind they would need to see that their votes, their constituents, you know, affections depend on taking on this issue. This happened with electrification, but it hasn't happened yet with high-speed internet access.
And would it be fair to say what you just pointed out, that part of the big reason is that these companies, Time Warner, Comcast, and the others, those are the largest two, have a real stake in keeping the status quo, and they are giving a whole lot of money to political campaigns, are they?
Absolutely, yeah. They're very large donors, and they're very well-connected. And because people don't understand exactly what's going on, it's difficult for people to act collectively to do anything about this issue. We're all feeling pretty isolated in our little communities. So, right. Yes, there's a lot of action, particularly at the state level. So 70% of the states have deregulated everything to do with communications access. And the federal government has also, for the last 10 years, deregulated oversight. So we've got the worst of both worlds. We have neither competition nor real oversight.
Thanks, Pete, so much for your call. Our number, by the way, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page, leave your comments there, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Mike in Franklin, hi.
Hi. You know, I just wanted to just contribute that I think the best thing that we can do, at least on the cable television side of the equation, is to vote with our feet, vote with our scissors, and cut the cord. We got to remember what the math is here. For every $100 that you spend on a cable bill, that's $1,200 a year after taxes that is coming out of your household budget.
Sure.
And then when you look at some of these packages that some folks have in their homes, where they're actually going north of $100, you know, $150, just for the cable TV portion of their bills, is that that's serious money. And if you're making $50,000 a year, you know, that's 4 or 5% of your income is going towards these kinds of costs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially if you also have the Cadillac wireless plan and you have the Cadillac telephone plan, is that, you know, you can hang up a $30 in a major metropolitan area like Milwaukee. I happen to live halfway between Racine and Milwaukee is where my house is. And I have a simple antenna in my window. It's a step up from rabbit ears, but not a full-blown, you know, top-of-the-house antenna. And I get 40 channels just hanging that in my living room window between, you know, I get some Chicago stations and I get all of the Milwaukee stations, and there's movie channels on there. There's a number of public TV channels that are available. There are all the networks with no blackouts. They don't black out their own television station.
Mm-hmm.
There's weather channels. I mean, there is so much diversity in the free airspace. It's a no-brainer.
Susan.
Right. I mean, all of these, we went through a wonderful digital transition in 2009, which makes crystal clear transmissions available over your antenna to your home, and lots of programming there. The problem for a lot of people is twofold. One is sports, that it is impossible, really, to get access to sports content without a pay TV package. I can live without it, but a lot of people can't. And the other is that, perversely, the cable operators often charge less for the bundle, that is, pay TV plus high-speed data access, than they do for high-speed data access alone. And so that drives many people into the bundle, and especially they offer, you know, introductory packages for the first year or so that sucker people in, and then they just get stuck with it, and then they just pay those bills month after month. But I agree with the caller. Cut the cord. My problem is, or the problem I'm suggesting, is that if you're looking for lots of programming online to substitute what you had been getting under the cable TV package, it's going to be difficult, both because the programming industry is so concentrated and so in league with the cable distributors, and also because the cable guys can set caps, can charge it whatever they want, can pull all kinds of shenanigans to push you into ever-increasing bills.
Hmm. Thanks, Mike, very much for the call. Why is it also that we have cable in our house and we need it for work reasons, but I haven't paid as close attention to this as I will starting tonight when I look at the bill. But I know that we get tons of channels, Susan, that I would much prefer to not have on our cable package. I don't want them there. Some of them are, you know, kind of questionable channels. Why does that happen? Why do you have to pay for all of these things? What if you're somebody who doesn't watch ESPN? And that's a huge part of the whole bill. Why do you have to pay for it?
Yeah, great question. So you'd think that in this era, we'd get access to anything we wanted to individually. That's what's happened to newspapers and all kinds of things. All kinds of industries have been split apart by the impact of the Internet and the digital age. Not so this one, because there are very few programmers, certainly about four or five big ones. They own all the rights. And then there are very few distributors, and some of them play both roles. So Comcast is both a giant distributor and a giant source of programming with the NBCU universe of channels.
Right.
And so it's in the interest of that handful of players to keep the status quo in place. And if any maverick breaks ranks and goes out and tries to make its programming available a la carte or online, that means they're giving up on the dollars that would flow to them through this guaranteed distribution network and sort of hoping to make up for those dollars in other ways. And it's very difficult to do. So far, this programming model has stayed in place, and the bundles are, you know, negotiated by the programmers, and the cable operators just push everything through to subscribers. And we haven't seen it breaking down yet. So there you go. That's why it exists.
Hmm. Here's an email from Jonathan. I cut the TV cord in 94, haven't looked back. In fact, when I travel, I don't even watch TV in my hotel room. I get bored with the commercials and find most programming insipid. My wife and I get the discs from Netflix. If there's an important game we want to watch, we go to the local bar.
Yeah, well, bravo to you. That is certainly a great way to live. Here's the next question. If you wanted to run a home-based business that required very high upload capacity from your home, could you do it? You know, in a quarter of Wisconsin's rural areas, you can't even buy access to a line. It just doesn't exist.
Oh, a quarter?
Yeah, 23%. So that's a lot. And also, you know, it's not so bad in non-rural areas, but in rural areas it really is pretty bad. And a lot of people can't get that kind of fast upload capacity. Someone living in an Asian country can do that, can run that kind of home-based business. Maybe it's a telemedicine business, maybe it's education, who knows what it is. But we're being left behind in that, okay, great, we cut the cord, we're listening to NPR and PBS, but are we developing the new businesses that America's going to need to pull ahead in the next century?
Yeah, excellent point. Carl in West Bend, hi.
Hey. One thing I wanted to mention was not only that the cable companies have been cutting off services to certain things, but they've been adjusting their packages over the years so that something that's actually people watch, like HBO, Showtime, Cinemax, all these other things, they put in the basic packaging when they're not sure about it, And then as soon as it becomes, looks like anyone's interested at all, they pull them out and make it their own bundle.
Yeah.
So not only do you have to pay for the original bundle, your basic package, but then also these additional packages on top.
Yeah, a lot of this is just about addiction and the contractual power of these giant companies matching up with people's affection for these channels, and they just drive you into more and more expensive premium packages. That's right.
Well, let me ask what may be an absolutely stupid question, because we live in an age of money and lots of money in this country. I want to go back to these CBS to in NBC's being blocked in Milwaukee and in Green Bay. If you were doing the news, if you had a local station and you wanted to get the weather out and you wanted to get important news stories out and you had a commitment to serving in the public interest, why wouldn't, I say the question and I know how crazy it sounds, but why wouldn't that be your guiding philosophy instead of, you know, we want more money for transmission fees for all that we have because you're getting more money, so you better give us some of your money. What happened to the public interest here? Doesn't anybody think that's a good idea?
I'll bet you that there are local affiliates who would love to be showing the CBS news and doing their normal programming. Here's the problem. The networks are so powerful that they've grabbed back rights from those local affiliates. They're the ones. It's the people in New York who are making these decisions, not the people in the hustings who would like to be presenting local news. And the problem from the network's point of view, so let's look at it from their perspective, is that it is expensive. It remains expensive to create this programming. And advertising revenue that used to be all theirs, remember when we all watched, you know, Walter Cronkite, has now gone off in other directions. And the cable networks are taking some of it, and the Internet's taking some of it.
I see. Mm-hmm.
So they are looking for more revenue streams and hoping to use the cable guys. So remember, it's the networks who have chosen not to let their programming go out over the cable, over
right.
Time Warner Cable, not the cable company necessarily, that's chosen not to carry it.
I see. And that's the case. In Milwaukee, we have CBS, and that's because it's not an owned network-owned and operated facility, right?
That's right. But this has happened in Dallas and Los Angeles and New York, where about 3 million Time Warner Cable customers have lost access to CBS, and also, in some cases, to Showtime, which is owned by the same entity.
Right. Christian and Racine wants to know what you think about smart nodes on the electrical grid and the chances that it would supplant fiber, and you can tell me what the heck does that mean. I don't understand that at all.
Well, we used to think maybe 10 years ago that there would be all kinds of competition for high-speed Internet access and that wireless would fight it out with cable, which would fight it out with phone lines, and that maybe something called broadband over power line would come into being and beat everybody hollow. Turns out that would be the idea of actually pumping electrical information through your electrical socket as well as power. And the problem is there's a lot of interference on those lines. That is, these signals kind of jostle each other. And broadband over power line is now not considered to be a viable technology by the people who pretend to know what they're talking about. I may not be one of those people, but it's not a popular way at all of going forward. What does work is to use your existing electrical utility and the poles for that utility to string fiber optic cable along. So that fiber optic cable is actually strands of glass through which you're sending laser signals. And that can carry an unbelievable amount of information. So 90,000 TV channels can go through a single strand of fiber. And so in Lafayette, Louisiana, that's what they did. They ran fiber optic, these thin plastic tubes, along the lines of their electrical utility and brought fiber Internet access to everybody in town.
So what's it like to use your Internet then?
Well, just imagine having absolutely no sense of waiting or friction or even thinking about communications capacity. The same way that you just turn on electricity when you come at home.
Yes.
You would just come home and every screen would do exactly what you wanted immediately, no matter what you wanted to do. So that's what this kind of capacity makes possible.
Isn't that remarkable? That sounds like the new age, Susan.
Well, it exists in other countries. It just doesn't exist here.
Yeah. Carl, thanks so much for your call. We have lines open if you'd like to join our conversation. Our guest this hour is Susan Crawford, and she is the author of Captive Audience, The Telecom Industry and Monopoly Power in the New Gilded Age. And she is the former special assistant to the president for science, technology, and innovation policy. She co-led the FCC transition team between the Bush and Obama administration. She's a member of Mayor Michael Bloomberg's Advisory Council on Technology and Innovation, and she does many more things as well. But she really understands this whole field in a way that is really new to me. This is remarkable information, isn't it? So join us if you would like. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. Our email, talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And the conversation was prompted by the Time Warner blackout of CBS in its third week of dispute. There's also an NBC being blacked out because of the General Communications Company wanting more money for their programming to be put on cable. But there's also this whole other topic that Susan is an expert in. We'll have to have her back for just a full show on high-speed internet service and her concerns that it's really essential to the country's economic future, and it's not happening. Why? More phone calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go back to phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number. Greg in Richmond is our next caller. Hello, Greg.
Hi. I'm wondering why, like in the 50s and 60s when we had the interstate highway system that stimulated the economy, why we don't have fiber optic going to every home in the United States, saving, I'm thinking of the jobs it would create, saving fuel,
right,
for people working at home.
Right.
To me, it sounds like I've been saying this for years. Nobody listens to me, but maybe I'm not talking to the right people.
Susan is going to listen to you, I'm sure. Aren't you, Susan?
Yes. Well, that's exactly what we should do. And Eisenhower, moderate Republican, saw how important this was going to be not to leave any part of the United States behind. We do great things as a country. We routinely do. But we've lost our ability at the moment to take on these giant concerns that say the status quo is just fine. Now, the president recently announced something that I think is going to be helpfully disruptive, which is to bring fiber access to 99% of the schools and libraries in America over the next few years, and to just make sure that our kids and the people going to public libraries have this access that's needed. He's already come under extensive political attack. There's a big article in the Washington Post yesterday about this, just for suggesting that schools and libraries need fiber access, something that he could do. Yeah, he could do that through the FCC. He doesn't have to go to Congress. But so it's a tough, tough, tough political context. Also, there's a picture of the president golfing with the CEO of Comcast today. Not likely to happen.
On so many levels, so many questions. Sean on email says that he has noticed that CBS has been blocking IP addresses of Time Warner Internet customers, preventing customers from even watching relevant CBS news clips online.
Yeah, it has.
How can that practice be legal?
Well, it's legal because, again, just contractually, CBS owns its programming. It can decide who it wants to show it to. And often the Internet is just, you know, a ploy in these fights. Fox and Cablevision did the same thing in the past. And it's a bigger picture. So NBC now controls rights to the Olympics, and they can make sure that that Americans can't watch our own teams competing in the Olympics online because they want to make sure that we're actually watching that through our cable system and not online. So this is just a demonstration of the power of the programmers here. They can choose who watches what online. It's not illegal.
You must be, I don't know how, you have all this information and all these things that should be changed. Doesn't this drive you all nuts?
Well, I'm in this for the long haul. This is a really big issue. And
it is a big issue.
Yeah, if I was constantly just yelling at people, I wouldn't get anywhere. So I really try to demonstrate how laughable this is. How could it be that this country, the place where the Internet was born, the place that gave rise to the first generation of Internet innovations, is so woefully behind when it comes to creating the very high-capacity, inexpensive networks that our people are going to need to compete in the 21st century?
Right. Yeah. It's unfathomable, really, in many ways. It just is. Greg, thanks very much for the call. David is next in Ironwood, Michigan. Hi, David.
Yes. I think these big companies need to be broken up. I mean, six corporations own most of the media in the world?
Yeah.
Break them up. Also, the net neutrality, the fact that didn't pass that. I mean, they should pass that.
Yeah. Well, a couple big issues here. Basically, you can't have a telecommunications service that's serving all Americans without having government oversight. Can't be done. And this is not a right-left issue. You know, it's a basic input into every market, every social policy, everything we want to do. We want to make sure that everybody has great access. The way to do this is to have government intervention. Doesn't happen by accident, but we don't have a lot of appetite for it at the moment. I think that what people are going to find out is not only can these giant operators decide what users can watch online, they can also decide what networks can connect to their networks. So Time Warner Cable is big enough that it can say to other networks, hey, look, you can't reach my subscribers without paying me. Mm-hmm. And so just like a highway system depends on connections between the highways in order to make it work, imagine a highway system where one beltway had so much market power that it wouldn't let you on unless you paid whatever it wanted. That's where we are right now with Internet access in America. And my hope is that gradually Americans will understand this and vote on this basis. Really, it's political power that's needed more than anything to be a countervailing force to this enormous market power.
David, thanks so much for your call. Carolyn in Lamira. Hi, Carolyn.
Hello. See, I see advertising every once in a while on one of those, you know, networks that are a device called Clear TV, and it's supposed to take the place of some of the cable stations, and you pay for it one time, and then you have it. Are you familiar with anything like that, or if there is anything that actually works?
Clear TV. I'm not familiar with that one, but tell me how it worked. What did you get? What did you watch?
Well, I haven't ordered it, and that's why I was just wondering. Before I ordered it, I was wondering if it actually works. But it's supposed to be able to bring in signals anywhere that you're at, and it's supposed to bring them in high definition and also many of the stations that the cables would carry. So that's why I'm just wondering if it's just a bogus advertisement or if it actually works.
Well, it would be possible to get broadcast stations if they're already being made available in your area. I can imagine a wireless carrier making a sort of special little tiny VCR for you so that you could watch them. This has been found to be legal. It's called an Aereo service in both in New York and in California. But when it comes to making making it possible for you to watch Mad Men or sports, I can't really imagine a way to do that outside the existing cable packages and satellite packages. I'm not sure. I don't know how they would have done that.
Susan, you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but considering the fact that you know all of this and you're concerned about it, what do you do? Have you pulled the plug, too, and you figure out other ways to get information, or because you're so savvy about all of it?
Well, exactly. Yes, I had a 1986 television that I got to watch the Mets win the World Series that I took downstairs in my building. I live in an apartment building in New York City, so I don't have a TV.
Oh.
And I read the paper religiously, and I listen to the radio a lot, so that's
Susan.
Why I'm always enthusiastic about radio shows. So I'm not the typical American, and so don't rely on me to know anything about TV programming. But I do understand the prices of all these things, and I do watch the market really, really closely.
Carolyn, thanks for the call. Margol in Linksville. Hi, Margol.
Hi. I'm enjoying this program. I have been in verbal and written combat with my cable provider out of Boscobel, Wisconsin, and the price has been going up and up on cable. Transmission is not that great. And I've heard this from the repairman I've had here, that their costs keep going up, hence they have to raise their fees. But I live in the Bluffs along the Mississippi. There is no way I can put an antenna up to cut the cable, and trust me, I'd love to. But many of us here in this community are retired. Not only can we not afford to continue paying these high cable bills, but we have no alternative. What do we do? And should we organize a consumer group like they did for the power companies? And
what do you do? I feel like you have no options. There are some municipalities in Wisconsin that are trying to develop their own fiber networks for connectivity. That's not going to solve your programming problem, but it would get you access to the Internet for a reasonable price. And there's a lot of interesting stuff online. And, the older generation is adopting Internet access faster than any other demographic group because we really understand how it's valuable. So take a look at what's going on in, Chippewa and Reedsburg. There are some places in Wisconsin that are really trying to gather together and make sure that everybody gets reasonably priced access.
How do you know these places? Susan, are you from Wisconsin?
No, I did my homework before.
I guess you did. Thank you. Margot, thank you very much for your call. Arlene in Madison, hi.
Hi. I think you've pretty well answered my question, though. When I talked to your personnel, I had turned my radio off, and I was asking about ARIO, too, so I didn't hear all of the answer, but I had signed up to be pre-registered some time ago and just had not heard anything more about it here, but it's supposed to be coming to Madison.
ARIO.
Yes, this is the thing. It's like a little tiny antenna that ARIO sets up just for you, and they pick up broadcast programming for you and then let you stream it to your own PC. But again, this is just the broadcast channels, but that could be a lot if you want to get access to them online.
Right. Thank you, Arlene, very much for your call. Is there anything on the horizon that's going to make all of this, what we have now, just totally obsolete so cable companies wouldn't exist because we have a whole new way of communication?
Well, fiber is much better as a technology than cable, and it's going to be around for the next 50 years. So that's the next move. Unfortunately, in Wisconsin, you've had a big battle over what kinds of fiber networks will be allowed to operate in your state. In 2011, WISCNET was the center of a big battle, and battles over whether you could keep federal funding to support that network. I mean, this was part of the whole Walker set of disputes with AT&T very, very much involved. So yes, fiber is the future. That's where we all should be heading. But politically, it's difficult to make sure that everybody gets this kind of access, just as it was for electrification.
Yeah. And yet you look at what it's supposed to be all about. It's giving us knowledge and giving us entertainment. It's giving us information, all these important things that are part of American society. Isn't it a shame that it is also political and it's all governed by big bucks?
Yeah, well, when FDR came into office, 90% of farmers in America did not have electrification.
Right.
And it was a giant political battle. In fact, there were newspaper editorials saying, well, water is a utility, but not electricity. Electricity is not for everyone.
Oh.
And that's where we are right now with high-speed Internet access. And it actually takes collective political action to turn the tide.
Right. And do you see any of that? Do you see any collective political action?
In isolated places, absolutely. There are people building these municipal networks. Mayors all over the country are exercised about this and want to make sure their citizens do well. But so far, not enough people vote on this basis, and that's what really would need to happen to change the situation. And I'm just an academic. I am not going to be leading a movement. I'm hoping for other people to lead movements. And so far, that hasn't happened with as much energy as I'd like to see.
Yeah. Well, not due to you in any way whatsoever, your want of trying or your knowledge of this whole area. Susan, thank you so much. I've learned so much. I can't believe it. I can't believe this. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Susan Crawford, we'll need to have her on again and just talk about Internet and high-speed Internet. We were covering a lot of different topics, but they're all related, as you could tell, because they're owned by the same companies. Susan is the author of The Telecom Industry and Monopoly Power in the New Gilded Age. She's a professor of law, a fellow at the Roosevelt Institute, and a co-director of the Berkman Center. And she is a member of Mayor Michael Bloomberg's Advisory Council on Technology and Innovation. Thanks to K.P. Whaley and Rhonda Fanning, who produced this program. Thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. We have news coming up from National Public Radio. This is time to listen to radio, right? Skip TV. And then we'll return with another hour.